G'day everyone, and welcome to this show. And today's guest is Nikki Myers. How are you going, Nikki?
Really well, thank you, Peter. Thank you for having me.
No worries. Thank you for coming on. Now, you're a member of Western Sydney Paranormal. Now, the website, people can go and check it out as we're talking, www.westsydneyparanormal.org. I've had Craig Powell on before, who's also a member of the team. Now, you're one of the founders as well and the lead investigator. Would you mind going into how you got into this, your experiences, how things sort of started for you and your interest in this field?
Craig probably touched on the starting bits with Whisper. For me personally, I was born in India and grew up with the paranormal. It was pretty much normal what we were experiencing. And when we did actually come to Australia in the late 70s, it was kind of really weird not to have anything happen. You know, it was that glorious where we were, I guess, in terms of paranormal, that it was quite a different mood over here. People didn't want to talk about it. If anything did happen, it was all pretty hush hush. And whereas back home, it was second nature. You know, India's incredibly old, incredibly spiritual, so it was just a totally different vibe. So growing up with some of those things that were occurring, you know, pretty much on a daily basis, and we moved a lot around India. My grandfather was a doctor in the British Indian Army, so we were moving around a fair bit and got to experience some pretty phenomenal stuff, some of which I've yet never to be able to experience again over here. And I'd love to take Craig back, you know, and see if we can capture some of those things through grown-up eyes. You know, from a child's point of view, it's quite different. And a lot of it was really, what's the word I'm looking for? It wasn't even scary. It was just normal. You know, we grew up with ghosts in the house, and they were as real as you and I, you know, that they would be sitting at the dining room table and interacting, and you know, yet they weren't from this realm. So quite phenomenal type of stuff. So I always had an interest in it, and growing up, always loved all the, you know, the spooky stories, and in preference to anything else. So when we our own paranormal experiences started to heighten after the accident that we were involved in, it was really quite surreal, because we knew we had visitors in that home, but everyone had always said it was just such a really lovely feeling place, you know. It didn't bother us. I mean, some of the things were quite funny, and you know, it was kind of nice just knowing that they were around. So when my in-laws moved in while I was in hospital, and the experiences were really, really full on, I couldn't even believe that this was my home, if that made sense. You know, it kind of sounded like something out of, like Amityville. It was just like, what the hell? Like, this is just not, this can't be happening. This is just, you know, out of this world. But it was, and my in-laws, particularly my mother-in-law, was very, very frightened. I shouldn't laugh, but I mean, it's kind of funny, you know, just sort of wish I'd been a fly on the wall with some of this stuff, because I think a lot of it was sense of humour. They did have a sense of humour, but she wasn't seeing it like that at all. And we were really concerned as well, what do we do? Who do we call? We couldn't have them leave the house. We were kind of catch 22. We needed them to be around to help out with the kids and Craig, who was still in recovery as well. So it was a really horrible predicament to be in, you know. And some people had suggested that we, you know, go to the police, and it's like, what the man, what the hell do you say? Like, you know, it was really, really frustrating. So when I came out of hospital, I actually ended up Craig ringing me one night, and he walked through the house with the cordless phone, and I'm talking to whoever, and I'm thinking, oh God, if the doctors hear this, they're going to move me from the ortho ward into the psych ward, you know. But I kind of just said, look, this is what's happened, and they're visitors in our home, and we can't, you know, we don't treat visitors like that. You've just got to really tone it down, and I know they don't do things the same way I do, or, you know, the family will be back together, and they can't, and it worked. It settled down. It wasn't quite as intense as what they were experiencing previously. So when we got home, and it kind of like, well, what the hell happened? How do we get this fixed? Because it was still kind of a little bit hiccupy, you know. It wasn't quite as smooth as it was beforehand. The dynamics had obviously changed quite a lot while we were away. So that really was probably the catalyst of us starting Whisper, because if we were in that predicament, we figured, well, how many other people were also in that same sort of situation? We'd find that, you know, friends and neighbours would always come to us anyway if they were, you know, anything weird was happening, or they had heard a story or whatever. And, you know, I sort of was involved in some of the old pagan stuff as well. So, you know, we were kind of renowned for those sort of things. So it felt like a natural progression to start something where we could help people and learn ourselves, you know. And we wanted to kind of experience that ourselves again, but from a different angle, if that makes sense. You know, we knew it wasn't faulty electrics or, you know, cupboard doors that weren't shut properly, but we went through all of that. You know, some of the things with the bed, they weren't allowed to sleep in our bed. The bed would shake so violently it would hit up against the wall. I mean, you know, there's no earthquakes and stuff like that, that sort of violent, you know, shaking that was taking place. So, you know, forming Whisper was probably the next stage on to helping other people, but also helping ourselves as well.
With this going back, if we go back to India, with the component there as a child, because it's different having those experiences as a child. I know even myself how different it is until, you know, you look at it through adults' eyes, like you're saying. With that upbringing and background, did you also witness, I would say, you know, UFO, like interdimensional type stuff besides just haunting type activity over that way? But even though it wouldn't have seemed so how it does in an adult's eyes, did you witness any of that sort of stuff in India as well?
Not really. I can't recall UFO type things. We lived at one stage on the border of India and Pakistan, and there was a war there, so there was constantly lots of things, lights going on, you know, it was anti-aircraft. And so whether or not that occurred, and I can't remember my parents saying anything like that either, but there was certainly a lot of the Indian tales of chirails, which are the female ghosts with their feet turned backwards, you know, and their aim is to kill men. And my father had a run-in with one of these chirails, and he's a very, very, he's ex-army as well. So, you know, very down-to-earth man. And he still tears up to this day when you speak about that incident, because he couldn't wrap his head around it. You know, he'd heard all the stories, thought it was superstition until he actually had an experience himself. And he still to this day can't rationalize what it was, apart from the fact that it was this supposedly mystical creature known as a chirail. And that was a fairly close encounter that he had with one of these things. So, you know, would love to be able to sort of dig deeper with that. But that was quite interesting, yeah.
Well, like you were saying too, like the Indians have a well-rounded background, whether we go to the Mahabharata or whatever, with Indian background in terms of how open they are spiritually and culturally, and looking to the stars and other realms. They've been very open, like always been very open about it. But then you come to Australia, and even like the Aboriginals, again, very open like that. But everything's been, you know, sort of tainted by the white man here in westernized culture, you know, with America and that type of thing, same thing that happened there. Have you seen a change here in the years that you've been here in Australia with people opening up more to the possibility of the paranormal and that in your eyes compared to India?
Definitely since probably the last 8 years, I think. I remember I was pregnant with Diesel, and we would be watching Most Haunted, right, from the English, loved it, to the point where he was born and he'd hear the Most Haunted, you know, music come on, and his little head would turn around, you know, he'd just recognise the music. So he's going to be 8 next month, and in that time frame, since those kind of shows have come out, people are a lot more open with it because it's cool, you know, it's cool to kind of have there's ghosts in the house, or there's an understanding, and a lot of that fear has kind of been taken away. It's not embarrassing, you know. There is people that can help you or places you can, you know, ring up, and there's lots of information. The web has helped greatly. You're not so isolated and you don't have to, you know, go to a library. I know when we were first experiencing all of this, it was, where do you look? You know, you type in that sort of stuff on the web and you're getting these stupid games that were coming up, you know, like Demons and Dragons or whatever it was, and you're thinking, well, that's not very helpful. So certainly the web has definitely helped and made the world a lot smaller. So you kind of, you know, you're getting the different stories and you can put them together and you're hearing other people's things and you're not alone. So, you know, it's made a huge difference, I think.
Oh, definitely. Yep. The internet's made a world of a difference. Just, it brings everyone closer, like you're saying, and just easy to network and communicate and research information. With the team up Western Sydney, what sort of position do you take? You're a lead investigator and one of the founders. What sort of your specialty when you're doing the investigation? What sort of role do you take on? Usually everyone's sort of got, you know, you've got an EVP person and a tech person and, you know, people sort of specialising in one or two fields. What sort of role do you take within the group?
I'm usually the one that sort of interviews the medium and, you know, oversees things. Craig usually has everything sorted. I'm kind of like his 2IC, making double checking. And then do the, you know, make sure you've got your wallet and your keys and all of that. And then, you know,
you
do the
don't have a man look, because when you have a man look, you don't see Jack.
And then during the invest, whatever needs to be done, and sort of oversee the whole thing in that respect. And like I said, if we've got a medium on board, then I'll do the interviews and we'll go through like that. Craig will often ask me about where we might set up things or what I feel. And, you know, we work really well together in that respect. We kind of, you know, we've known each other for a while, so we can kind of play off each other. So it's a little bit more of a relaxed role. It used to be a lot more full on, but, you know, I've sort of stepped back a little bit in the last few years just with kind of doing some other things that I'm interested in. It's just time wise, you know. So whatever and whenever.
Well, that's it, you know, and you've got to have a balance with these types of things as well. Doing this, I know myself doing, you know, a bit of that, bit of what you guys do too. It's just having that well-rounded balance. Now, with like, if people can go to the website, there's lots of information. There's basically like a sort of mini TV series. There's bit of info about the investigators, some of the locations, and some videos and EVPs and photos. So there's evidence up on the website of you know, what you captured at different places. What's been and, you know, you've done a wide variety of places too, and you've got a method sort of like, you know, if it's allowed up on the website with the people being cool with it, we're investigating, you know, it's all done under par, you know, it's all been done properly. What's been some of the spots that you've investigated that sort of just, you know, whether there's a story to it or an experience there, what's been some of the places that have just blown your mind in terms of experiences when you've gone to investigate?
Oh God, there's a few of those. Lately we've been doing the, you know, when you asked me previously about what else I do in the tech, I like to think like I'm the ideas person as well. I'll throw out the ideas and then everyone else can work out how to do it. And that's how Tailgate Terrors came about. It was, you know, it's hard to get into locations and the paperwork and, you know, the money that's involved. And, you know, so I said to Craig, well, you know, what about, there's all these road stories and I'm in transport. So, you know, all the truckies that have, and they're down to earth people, man. And if they've got a story, it's legit.
Of UFO reports I've got from truckies and it's been correlating in areas. I'm like, geez, you know, these guys are out and about. So
So Tailgate Terrors has been really, really great in that respect. We get to get out and about and you're not stuck indoors the whole time. So when we did Oakley recently, that was really, really cool because it was our first real outdoor location. So there was a lot of challenges that we had to kind of overcome, just change our whole thinking of how we would normally do it, which is why I really like the outdoor stuff at the moment, because it's really pushing the boundaries compared to the usual indoor things, you know.
Especially and when you, when you review the evidence, because you've got a lot of background stuff that with EVP and video, you've sort of got to go, you know, unless it's concrete, it could be anything sort of thing. So there's a lot of different ways you have to go about it.
Yeah. And look, and recently we were out a couple of weekends ago to a place we'd scouted previously. And as soon as I got out of the car, I just had this, oh, my God, this feeling, you know, like when birds sit on your head, that it was just, and I just knew it was going to be, you know, something was going to happen. It was just, the whole place was electric. And it wasn't due to, you know, the wind or anything like that. It had a different vibe altogether. It was like you were sitting in a room that, you know, was fully activated with something, and yet we're in this huge open space, and you get these moments of whoa, you know, which I love, because, you know, then you back it up with other things. It ended up being fairly quiet, but every time we have a fairly quiet night, we capture some of our best stuff. So we're still looking, going over, you know, reviewing it, but I dare say we'll come up with something pretty extraordinary, you know, just that little 2-second grab of whatever freezing yourself with. But yeah.
What's some of the homes, like you've done homes as well, like you do a lot of homes, as if, what's been some of the sort of the homes you've done that have just blown you out, that, you know, same sort of thing, you might think there's not much to it, and then all of a sudden you've captured something.
Wow, this tiny little place, it was so unassuming, it just looked really normal, really average, it was in a little cul-de-sac, it just looked very anything, you know, extraordinary. And I thought, oh yeah, this looks, you know, nothing much is going to happen. And that place ended up being just phenomenal. I mean, Craig was scratched. We got some incredible EVPs out of it. I mean, there was the physical stuff that happened, the whole feelings in the place, the things that were coming up. Again, that had a lot to do with Aboriginal, you know, because it was built, as most of the places are around this area, is built on Aboriginal. But this tiny little unassuming home, this little cottage, and the wild stuff that was going on inside was just, it was just phenomenal, you know, just so unassuming. And that was one of our first ones that we did. And we just thought, you know what, man, you can just cannot judge a book by its cover. It's not these great big huge spooky mansions. It's these tiny little everyday places that are having the most incredible activity, and we found that over and over again. You know, never just look at the front door and go, yeah, nothing's going to happen here. We found that a few times with some fairly intense moments at that place and another location, very similar house as well, very similar location, and again the activity that they were having was phenomenal. At one point during the night, we'd gotten there just before it got dark, and she had the windows open. The flies had been coming, you know, as it was getting closer to us coming. She said, my God, we've never had this happen before, ever. The flies, by the time it was nightfall, you couldn't even speak without these flies entering your mouth and going up your nose. The windows are open to let them out. They were just multiply, Peter, you've never seen anything like it in all your life. And by the time we'd finished and we had a medium there who'd sort of cleared this thing that had sort of taken up residence, you know, all the flies had dissipated. But that was absolutely phenomenal. We'd never seen anything like that. It just, these flies, hundreds and thousands of these flies, right? So, yeah.
What do you reckon the reason was behind that?
Like, well, there was something.
Do you have any theories or?
Well, at the time, there was, you know, there's talk of when there's really dark energies or, you know, demonic, they use that word because they don't know anything else that describes evil like that. You know, this thing about this infestation of flies that occurs. And this family had said they'd never had any, they had fly screens on the windows, but to let the flies out, you know, we were trying to get rid of them, but these things, they were like they were multiplying inside the house. And once that energy had been removed, the evil energy, the flies had all dissipated. They've never had a problem since. But as it was sort of, you know, culminating to the sort of crescendo of the evening when things just got, you know, phenomenal, it was insane. That was just insane. And there had been a murder apparently in the house as well, and we were able to verify that later. But the flies was something that, you know, we haven't come across that again. Yeah, oh, that's right. Yeah, Craig was saying that's right. They even had blood. There was blood that was running from the wall, which is where this person had been actually stabbed and had been killed, up against this wall in the hallway, and there was blood that had been trickling off, which we were able to verify as well. That was blood. But that and the flies in this little tiny little home. Yeah, unbelievable.
Jeez. So, have you come across anything similar with that?
No, never. And you hear a lot of stories where the flies and this infestation with devils and, you know, demonic stuff, you hear that. It comes up quite a bit. But that was our only experience with it. And no, we haven't come up against... We don't even get that outside, let alone inside this house. And, you know, all the obvious things were checked. And at night as well, you don't get flies at night. And this is in the middle of the night, where these flies were just, you know, like I said, it was horrible. It was up your nose. You couldn't talk and blah, it was just everywhere. And then the fact that they just disappeared like that in itself was pretty incredible too. So, yeah.
Definitely. In terms of the physical side of things, in terms of, like, Craig's been, you know, bruised and scarred up. He's had a lot of that happening, which people can go and see the other show I've done with him, which is fascinating in terms of everything that we covered. It'd be great to get him back on again and you sometime. But in terms of physical sort of stuff, I guess with seeing doors open and close or objects being moved, what's been some of the hardcore stuff sort of like that you've witnessed or the crew's witnessed while doing an investigation?
For me, seeing shadows, seeing people that you know that aren't there. I had an incident a couple of times, actually, and I had my younger son, Rocco, who was only, 15 at the time, with me. And, you know, you have that feeling that you're not alone, right? And that's kind of how it was. We knew, we felt like we were being circled. We knew we weren't alone. But the fact was we were alone. And on our way out, I turned around with the torch and we could see a light, but it was just a reflection off something that I was holding. And I turned the torch on just to see, you know, that's what it was. It was just a reflection. And as I've moved the torch across the doorway was this man standing there. He was huge. It was this huge black shadow man standing in the doorway. And I got such a fright. My first reaction was to push my son back. And he saw it as well. It was just a blink of an eye. And it was gone by the time I'd sort of put the torch back up. But we both saw him standing in the hallway and could both describe kind of, you know, what he was wearing and the size of him. He was quite huge. So seeing is something that I've done quite regularly. I've been whacked on the bum once at Maitland Jail, right outside George Savis's cell. I thought it was one of the other girls mucking around, and there was just no one behind me. It was quite an it was a whack. It was a decent sized whack. But I don't tend to get as as riled up as Craig does. You know, he seems to, and that's cool. We're happy with that. He's bigger. He can take it. So you know, there's those kind of things that you tend to see the doors. I mean, we have stuff happen here at home as well, which has probably freaked me out more because it's your own home, more than anything else. And that's stuff that's come back, you know, from an investigation. We haven't, you know, obviously taken care of our business before we left too well, but you know, those sort of things just kind of happen, and you're expecting it to, or you're okay with it because of what you're doing. Mm-hmm. It's when it happens in your own home that's when it's really off-putting.
When you do the research, but like obviously when you're doing some of the investigations, you go and do research to see if you can validate the claims of the home that the homeowners are making or whoever's residing in the premises. Has there been any sort of really trippy, freaky correlations you've been able to make or even find out more information than what they knew in regards to some of the premises that you've investigated? That sort of correlate with, you know, maybe more murders happen in a spot than what previously first thought or anything like that? Because when people do backtrack and do some research, it's amazing some of the historical evidence and things like that that can pop up, just not known beforehand.
Yeah. Well, yeah, like Craig's just saying now, it was more Oatley with the car where we were finding out some more and more information. Like, we went in there fairly blind with just basics. It was the Oatley ghost car. And then as we've continued to research and, you know, get people's opinions on various things and the cars and the models and things like that, that was really cool. And the deaths that took place there, we were only looking at one thing. We had no idea there was a string of these people missing and various other deaths that had occurred. We just thought it was this one single incident. The other place was at the Oaks at Plumpton. Again, we just thought it was only very, we didn't really know much actually when we walked in there, but the stories kept coming out after our experiences, right? One of our mediums had spoke about seeing these bones in the trees, and she's just like, I don't know what the hell, I'm seeing these bones up in the trees, right? And the historian then turned around and said, well, yeah, that makes sense, because the Aboriginals would bury their dead up in the trees, you know, so that the birds would eat the flesh. So that was pretty cool, because that was kind of like, and, you know, validation. Plus the way the trees were planted, it was like these weird circles. So it made sense that that's how they'd bury their dead up in these trees. So lots of little things like that. I can't think of anything else at the moment.
Have you had many reports on ghost cars? Because I can actually tell you something about that in terms of, it would have been around maybe 2004 or 5. I was heading back to Albury from Melbourne after seeing 50 Cent, the rap artist, live. With a couple of cars of the boys, and we were driving back to Albury, which is about a 3.5-hour drive, and a bit out of Melbourne, I pulled over. At the time, I was smoking to have a cigarette. I was just, my back was killing from just the way I was sitting. I got a 1975 Gemini, so a little coupe type thing, and it was just killing my back. Anyway, I pulled up, and so the other car I was with continued on. And anyway, we caught up about an hour out of Albury, about an hour and a half later or so, and they're going, dude, what the hell are you doing? And I'm like, what is going on about? They're like, why come up and turn your lights off at the back of the car? And I'm like, I lost his and pulled up. Like, we didn't even bother calling him. We just pulled up because I was just like, stuff it, I need to stop. And I told him what had happened, you know. I pulled up, had a cigarette, had a break for about 15 minutes because my back was killing me. And then, like, once they knew I wasn't talking crap, they're like, well, this car came up, I think it was two or three times to the back of him, and then the lights were gone. And one of the blokes was saying there was no turn-off points because it's a Hume Freeway. So at certain points between Albury and Melbourne, unless it's like a main turn off, there's really sort of nowhere to turn off, even for the farming areas, unless it's a side road.
So
years later, even down the track, I'm thinking, you know, I don't know what to make of that. And then when looking at your website, you've got that up on there about the ghost car, and I'm like, shit, you know, they exist. I've never heard of this. So I didn't know what to do with that. Has it been similar with the reports to yourself, sort of cars coming up and then just
disappearing? Yeah. Or they're hearing engines and not seeing anything, so it's audible but not visual, or it's visual and not audible. So I was going to ask you, did you hear, like, did your mates hear anything, or did they just see the lights and then
From what I remember, they were just saying, like, two lights was coming up to them and then nothing, and it happened two or three times, but knowing them, they would have had the music up full ball and and that sort of thing. But it makes me wonder, like, we can talk about residual and intelligent hauntings, and just for those that are viewing or listening, a residual haunting sort of like a tape player, the same energy, like an energy's trapped in their area going over and over, than intelligence where it's going to interact with you. And I'd thought maybe it's a residual, and then I thought, no, it had to come up to the car at a specific point, and there was a form of interaction with it doing that. That sort of, you know, for a material type object to be controlled by some intelligence, once human or whatever, you know, this brings up something different than the normal spirit side of things, where you've got, you know, the hauntings, there's something doing it, something intelligent, whatever people want to say. And I've found a lot of correlations between the abduction phenomena, or what people think is that, and haunting activity. But when you bring in a material object like a car, and there's the lights, this sort of takes everything out of what we previously thought. So you've heard of stories with audible noises, but you can't see a material object, and then vice versa.
That's correct. Yeah, that's correct.
Like a ball figure of how many reports would have you had?
Craig's saying hundreds. Hundreds? Yeah, hundreds of that.
So isn't, 5, 10, 15 reports. We're talking hundreds.
Yeah.
Hey, Pete, sorry.
Come in, mate.
Since we started doing Tailgate Terrors, and we actually put the call out there that, look, we're going to be making this little mini web series. Mm-hmm. If you've got any strange things from roads around the country that you want to report, feel free and send it in. I have a folder in my emails which is just jam-packed full of people saying, phantom vehicles, whether that be cars, motorcycle riders, you name it, trucks, you name it, people are reporting it. Airplanes. There's heaps of it. And as in regards to Oatley, the reason why we took the Oatley case as the first episode of Tailgate Terrors is because we had 13 reports, different independent witnesses seeing the same thing on the same street. And as paranormal investigators, how can we just ignore that?
Have you had much on the Hume Freeway reported at all?
There are a few there.
All right, well, that's just another one you can bang to the... And I know all the blokes, and they weren't... that's another one. With the area being that many years ago, I don't think any of us can remember the exact area after a concert like that, but, they were freaking out because they thought I was playing a joke. And my car's basically, I think, the only one in Australia like that. It's a Gemini, and I wouldn't do that. I've spent thousands of dollars on that car, and there's no way I'd do anything like that. So they thought I was joking, but... That's really good insight because I experienced that with my friends telling me. I didn't see it, but I experienced them telling me that. Then I saw that on your website. I didn't think it was that much of a common thing. I've heard of planes blinking in and out and weird noises that aren't there, but not with what you're reporting.
Yeah, it's just amazing that, the stories are very, very similar. And like I said, it's spread nationwide as well. And, a lot of these are from truckers that, they're just normal guys doing their jobs. They feel like they're a bit weird having to report this kind of stuff.
Any police officers or anyone like that or anyone in that sort of...
You know what? I've had one police officer, obviously, who wants to remain nameless, but it was in the middle of Sydney. I'm talking about Newtown in Sydney. Where they reported watching a vehicle drive up to them and just vanish into thin air. So, I think, I found it really hard when we were doing Tailgate and we were investigating the ghost car to wrap my head around the whole thing about, okay, I can get the theory of life after death or, ghosts being spirits of the dead. Well, how the hell then are we getting ghost cars?
Yeah.
Right? But Nick explains it really well. Nick explained it really well.
Do you want to go into that, though? Because that's something that I was wondering. Cheers, Craig, for that as well. Do you want to go into that, Nikki? Cheers, mate. It's all good. But that's what first came to mind as I said to you. What's going on here? Because we hear about, spirits or beings or interdimensional crafts in terms of, UFOs or whatever. But ghost cars, what's your idea behind this?
Well, everything's made up of energy, everything has got energy, whether it be a leaf, the table, all energy. So what if that energetic, we'll say car for the sake of it, right? That car, there's a glitch in time. They talk about past, present, future all happening at once,
Definitely.
Right. So what happens if there's just this little hiccup and you're seeing something just from, that era, 1950s, just happened to just slip into our, 2015 and then disappear again. There's something to do with the ley lines, our grid, around the world as well, the grids, why these things are happening at these specific points. It's even where murders or murderers even are born, they've noticed that it's on these specific ley lines where there's this energy that's created, right? These specific places. So what happens if that's what it is? We're just getting a little glimpse into, like, you know, yeah. Oops, something's just slipped through. And certainly we can say that with the planes as well, you know, just with the dates and the cars, and it's really hard to sort of then retrace a lot of that. You've got to be there at that time, at that moment, and, you know, hopefully capture the same thing. But, I mean, I'm quite a believer in the quantum physics, and, you know, that there is that possibility where you do have those glimpses in space, because there's no other, you know, it's not like it's got a spirit or a soul, right, or it's consciousness. It's an energy, but it doesn't have its own consciousness. So, you know, what's the likelihood of that?
Well, that's very interesting. It'll be, you know, it'd be hard to capture something like this in the act, but if there's certain hot spots, it'd be interesting to see what the electromagnetic field or even the radiation in the area with the Geiger counter, if there's any sort of anomalies in those types of areas. The other thing, too, is if it is a sort of a time jump thing, I wonder how many reports out of the reports are very old vintage-type cars or even futuristic cars we haven't even fathomed yet.
Yeah. Well, look, how many photos that they've come across where, I can't remember the recent one, but say it was in the Renaissance period, and actually this was Charlie Chaplin, actually, and she's actually one of the Charlie Chaplin movies, and his offsider, the female, was talking on what looks like a mobile phone. Right? Have you heard of that?
Yeah, I have.
How does that happen? I mean, they didn't have anything like that, you know. Or there's been people photographed in Renaissance time with baseball caps and sunglasses, right? Now, is that a traveller from the future, or what the hell's happened? You know, it wasn't photoshopped. And so there's all these really cool, interesting things to kind of look into. And if we've got an open mind, particularly these reports, if you can see some sort of similarity with dates and times, and it's really hard because, you know, people usually say, oh, it was years ago, I saw this, and they can't give you a pinpoint date, but we've got to start somewhere. Yeah. So, you know, by kind of getting the stories, and then that's what we did with the Oatley, 13 people, and they had very, very similar stories, so we were able to kind of narrow it, you know, just to get the date and time or that sort of that space where we can then go back and see what it is that's causing it, you know. Who knows?
There's trippy stuff, and anybody watching, if you've experienced anything, let these guys know, just to add to the collection, you know, this is what it's about, this gathering stuff. Have you had, is there anything similar to this that you're researching or had reported in terms of just people contacting you about some weird stuff that just isn't your, not that you've got an average haunting or a paranormal activity site, but just really out of the blue sort of whacked out things?
Oh my God, have we, Craig? Have we got anything like, there's been a, like, is there anything that we don't kind of, he gets all the emails basically, so he filters them. Is there anything like that that's not on our radar?
Oh, look, Pete, we get so many emails crossing over so many types of phenomena and activity. I wouldn't know where to start. Just when you think you've heard the most bizarre thing in the world, you get an email the next day that kind of just tops it all together, you know. So, look, everything from ghost elephants in Sydney.
Ghost elephants?
Yep.
Oh, God.
Yeah, you name it, we'll get reports of it.
And
you know,
Sydney to have something like that, like...
A ghost elephant.
Yeah. Like, they're not native to here, so this is where... Oh, well, I don't know going back how many thousands of years if they ever were here, but...
Yeah. Look, but you know what? We keep it in the folder, and if something like that ever pops up again, you know, we'll cross-reference it, and if we get more reports of it, then as bizarre as it sounds, we'll go out and we'll check it out.
What about shape-shifting type stuff? Like, we hear about the famous Skinwalker Ranch in America. Have you had any sort of stuff with wolfmen or even shape-shifting entities or anything like that at paranormal hotspots?
Doppelgangers?
Yeah, doppelgangers, yeah.
So, yeah, we've had classic doppelganger type activity on an investigation before as well. So, you know, seeing, having two crew members in different locations at the same time during investigation is probably one of the creepiest things I have ever been through on an investigation before, for
what,
sure.
What's your theory on this? Like, there's, what? So one of your crew members is in two places at once.
Yeah, yeah, so it was actually, we were actually filming a series called Phasmophobia with Moonlark Media. That was actually the very first episode we were filming down in Goulburn. And one of their production crew were in one location on site helping a camera person film. And he was not only with that camera person helping her film, but he was also standing right next to me during an interview. We can't figure it out.
And I've had reports like that similarly about myself, but I've got... what can you do with that, really?
You know, and he was standing a foot from me. He never said a word. He looked exactly how he was meant to look. I think even one of our own members went and tapped him on the shoulder.
Yeah.
How you doing type of thing. Yeah. He just didn't say anything and just turned around and disappeared. And we were busy. We didn't think anything of it. And it wasn't until the next day when people were chatting about it, it was like, you know, we kind of figured out he was in the same place at the same time. So for him, you can imagine what a spin out it was for the guy that was involved, you know.
Do you think there was anything to do with the energy in that area to do with that?
It was a very negative place. Nick and I have investigated that location a couple of times. We can't actually say where it is, but it's an old hospital down in Goulburn.
I think that was the first inland city in Australia, so it's pretty old school.
Yeah. Pretty old school, yeah. And, there's some not nice stuff there. So, yeah.
What's it like, I mean, two working together? Yeah?
it's really good, you know. It's kind of like having another me on an investigation. It's just sometimes I don't even have to think of it, and Nick's already doing it, or she's already got it planned and set up, ready to go type of thing. So, she's my security blanket, I guess you could say, Pete, in more ways than one as well.
Especially with us blokes having men looks at, you know, at everything, and then they go and find it straight away.
Well,
paranormal activity goes unnoticed.
And there's the fact as well that sometimes I find myself in trouble, like, you know, we spoke about, I'm the one that's always getting pushed or hit or kicked or whatever, so it's nice to have her there. It's a comfort, you know, if something, if shit starts to get real, so to speak, you know what I mean? So it's just normal. I feel whenever I investigate, she's not there, I kind of feel a bit naked. And I'm sure she can see on my face that when I'm going out to investigate without her, I start to get a little bit panicky at times as well. But, So, like I said, it's just more a security blanket thing for me as well. Nick's very more in touch with the psychic side of things too. I take our lead off Nick quite a bit in terms of what she's feeling, where she's feeling it. It works well. She's very psychically minded, very intuitive, and I'm the very kind of, I try to be the level-headed, very technical, scientific type of guy. So we don't always see eye to eye with things a lot, but, you know, she makes me question things, and I'm sure I make her question things as well sometimes. So.
Never. Always right.
Well, do you want to go into that in terms of the psychic side of things? Because this is what I found myself with my experiences in investigations. There is that component, and if you're in tune, I hate using words or labelling things, but you can sort of tap into things and get information or pull things out that you just wouldn't get otherwise unless you're that open.
Because, you can go in with a plethora of pieces of equipment, as we do, right? But your body is your best equipment, right? You know, that is never, ever going to let you down when you know if something's, it doesn't matter what these bloody things are saying in your hand, you know yourself if that feels good or not, right? If something has stepped into your personal zone, you know. Whether anything's flashing or not, you know. if you've been hit or, you know, if you're feeling sick, they're not going to, nothing like that's going to come up on the equipment. I mean, so a lot of it is personal in that respect, but if it can correlate with the equipment, well, that's really cool. But, you know, as far as when we're looking at setting up certain things, you know, if you're open to the environment, if you just stop and listen, you know, you yourself know, you get a feel for, you know, the facility, you have a feel for where something might occur because it has an energy. Everything has an energy. And if something's constantly happening in one area, there's going to be an energetic pull to it. Yeah. So if you're open to that, then again, you're going to go to that same spot. I mean, and that happened with when we were at, can I say the island? No?
Yeah,
Cockatoo.
Yeah.
The night we caught that, have they seen it yet? There's something really cool, right? And it was a really, really quiet night. But why I decided to put the camera where I, you know, put it, where we ended up putting it, it was based on feeling purely. Yeah.
We caught a full-bodied apparition. I have no hesitation in saying,
and it's bloody unbelievable.
We caught a ghost on video.
Yeah, right. Out of the full,
for sure. We're still doing some work out there at the moment, so just we're getting all our ducks in a row first before
yeah,
we
can't do that before.
We can't put it all out there. And I believe that everyone has a psychic type ability.
I did.
I say I did because it got to the point where it frightened me so much, Pete, that I kind of made a conscious decision to just cut ties with it. I didn't want it. I wanted my experience to be on the gadgets and on the cameras. So I'm seeing I'm showing you what normal everyday people could see. So I think we've all got that ability. Nick has always had that ability. She's always been sensitive to it. But I think Nick really stepped up, or her ability stepped up when she had an NDE, her near-death experience. And it's, you know, a lot of people around the world kind of say the same things. But for Nikki, I think that her abilities really got stronger after that NDE she had.
Would you mind going into that, what happened in terms of the experience?
Oh, the NDE, yeah. And it took a long time to work out that's what I had or to be able to speak about it because, you know, so much at the time was being focused on getting the physical well that I experienced at that time, even in the hospital, what was going on. It was just like such a spin out, you know. I couldn't make sense of it. So I'm thinking, well, how am I going to explain it to anybody else when I don't have the words or I don't know, you know? And I've always been interested in past life stuff and in NDEs, and I've, you know, it's just been something I've been interested in. So I was aware of what was happening, and I was aware of what I was supposed to do. Thank God, there would have been nothing worse than not know what was going on, your consciousness, and that's how people get stuck when they don't know. But it took a long time to come to terms with that and then to be able to speak about it because it's such an amazing, amazingly personal experience. I wasn't one to be into angels or anything like that, right? I wasn't anything like that. So the experience that I had, I was hit, run over by a car a couple of times. So the second time when he was leaving the street and was coming over back over the top of me.
That's hardcore.
Yeah, I know, right? So, and I did, I honestly thought this is it. This is, you know, I'm going to die tonight. And I actually felt wings wrap around me, Pet. I don't know. Now, like I sound like I'm on something, but I felt them. I felt these wings wrap around me. And even in the hospital, I'd hear the wings, and I was really attracted to Archangel Michael, right? This thing about Michael. Anyway, it wasn't until many years later that I did actually ask a trance medium about that, and it was Michael. You know, I just knew it was Michael that had wrapped his wings around. I just knew it, and she was able to verify, you know, that was, or she verified that, and I knew that without any question. But as far as the NDE, when I actually left the body, and I could see everything that was, you know, it was instant relief. The pain was just gone, and I was looking down, and I could see what was going on, and, you know, my brother had arrived, and I could see where Craig was and the kids, and my grandfather actually came to me, my dad's dad, and... you know, it was like I love big pine trees with fairy lights. Big on that, love my fairy lights. So it was this amazing long avenue filled with these incredible, like, Christmas trees, but with just white, bright fairy lights all the way. And right, and it kind of pointed, you know. And right at the end was this amazing white blue light. It was so brilliant. But I couldn't actually see it because my grandfather stood blocking the light. And he wasn't alone, but at the time I knew who he was with, but I couldn't see them. They were just like silhouettes. And he was making sure that I couldn't see the light because I was wanting to go there, you know. And we had quite a conversation. And, you know, they say your life, you know, you do. I got the life review on what had happened and what could be, and, you know, the choices, if I was to stay and if I was to come back. So it was a very conscious decision, and I use that word because it is my consciousness, conscious decision to come back into my body. And I knew, and I, look, I couldn't even recognize my body, to be honest. I'm just like, there's no way I'm going to fit into that, right? There is no way. But, you know, I knew it was going to be hard, but I knew I'd be able to walk again. I knew, you know, I knew what I had to do, you know. So because of the children and because of Craig, it was, and that's what happens, you know, it's because of that love bond. And I hadn't finished what I was meant here to do, so I came back in, and that bloody hurt. So things kind of changed a lot. You know, there's no fear of death, and even some days after that I go, why did I, what the hell? It would have been much easier to stay because it was just amazing, you know, just amazing. And I know what's awaiting, so that's not an issue. But I would have missed out on so much with my children, and I wasn't prepared to do that. So, yeah, that's the short
version. You want a lot of weight. Yeah, no, that's fine. And I've had similar experiences with what you're relating in terms of the out-of-body stuff and the beings and the perception of how gigantic you are, and just the, you know, it's just completely different. It's multidimensional.
Absolutely. And you're connected to everyone. There's no separateness. Mm. We're all connected, you know, and what I do to you matters because I'm doing it to myself. In the hospital, the things that were occurring in there, and I know I was never alone in that, even though I was, in and out of consciousness a lot of the time. But, you know, I knew who was there beside me helping, and all those things that happened and the synchronicity of it. And from that accident, our lives have been so enriched because we wouldn't have met. I met the most amazing people in the hospital. You know, we probably wouldn't have started Whisper and, you know, any of those experiences because the in-laws wouldn't have moved in. You know, there's all these other things that have occurred because of that. So, you know, it wasn't an accident. It was a blessing. It certainly made me look at how I live my life and what's really important, and rejig a lot of those things. So, you know, it's a shame that we have to have an NDE sometimes to get to that point. But I wouldn't change anything from that, Peter, you know. And you bring people into your life from that as well, you know, all the right people come in because you know that you're eternal and you're very conscious of what you say and what you do, and because it counts, man, it counts. Yeah. And there's no guy sitting on a throne with a beard. I mean, you face yourself, and that's tough.
It is, right? Yeah.
right? Yeah. Because it's like, oh my God, and you're feeling what you've done to that person. You know, you don't know if they've had a good day or a bad day, and they could have said something to you, and you've said something worse back to them, and you know, man, that hurts. You know, because you're seeing all of that yourself, and you think, good God, did I really do that? You know, it's just awful. So from that, I went to Brazil last year to have a healing. I was supposed to have more surgery. And I said, look, as much as the doctors were amazing and they're earth angels themselves, I wasn't quite prepared to go through the downtime. So I went to Brazil to John of God and had...
I know what you're talking about, the crystal bed joint and all that.
That's right, yeah. Just, again, there, that was just the most amazing experience of my life. And again, the synchronicity of that happening and how I heard about it and how I decided to go. And I was suffering a lot with anxiety and, you know, I couldn't even have anyone drive me, let alone me fly to the other side of the world by myself, right? He was being yes, dear, when I'm saying I'm going. But, you know, when I actually booked the ticket, he's like, oh, my God, you're really going. But there was no fear involved in that because I know that it was divinely looked after, and I was every step of the way. It was just somebody was there to take the bag for me, or you know, just all these wonderful, beautiful, delicious synchronicities. So John of God was amazing, and I had spiritual surgery, and then I ended up having physical surgery with him, which was mind-blowing. I had spinal surgery, and then 2 days later I was on a plane back home, so that was pretty cool. And I've not looked back since, you know. No, I don't have to have any surgeries here, and Entity told me to bring back a crystal bed, so I did, and I've set up a little crystal bedroom, you know, the Creative Spirit Center where we do our workshops for Whisper, and again, that was just synchronicity with the way all of that fell into place. I did numerology and astrology, so for me, number 3 is really specific, so all these 3s kept coming up. Even the crystal bed I ended up with was a number 3, and handed it over to me on the 3rd of June. So there's the 3 3s. And so I was like, oh man, are you kidding me? So it's been really wonderful. Really, really wonderful.
Can I just say too, Pete, I'm going to butt in again, but I was a massive skeptic about this John of God healing. You know, this woman needed spinal surgery, full stop. She had a deformed spine. And not to mention various other things that needed healing, shoulder, knee, ankle surgery, you name it. And for her to come back from Brazil after seeing this guy that I knew nothing about and not needing to have spinal surgery, not needing to have shoulder surgery or knee or ankle surgery or any of it, it's the most paranormal thing I've ever experienced. Don't forget all these investigations. When someone needs spinal surgery, and we're talking about fusion, and comes back after 3 weeks not requiring it, how do you explain that?
Yeah, it was just, for me, even watching what he did and seeing the entities getting, like, into his body, I just, left brain, right brain was having a meltdown. I've seen this. It's like, you know, and we're all sitting there and I'm watching these faces morph in and, you know, and then his eyes change colour and his body, he changes, you know. Because he's an unconscious medium, so he's just the vessel, and there's 43 of these spirit doctors that pop in and out as he does the surgeries. It's the most incredible thing. He is, you know, the ultimate paranormal experience, you know, totally. And he was out here last year in November, but he wasn't allowed to perform the physical surgeries here because of the Australian laws. And, you know, I saw tumours being removed out of people he never touched. And a man that had been in a wheelchair for 30 years, a German man, and he walked for the first time and just been told to stand up. And, you know, seriously, it was the most phenomenal thing. I said to Craig since then, I just tell you, it has to be, you know, dinner with Elvis to top that, because there is just nothing else that can kind of compare as far as, you know, you're talking about paranormal. Well, man, that was, I saw the A-plus show there, so, you know,
and there you go. The, you know, the living evidence of it, along with many other people. He keeps on popping up for me as well, just talking to people lately. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm going back there next May. I'll be going back there. So come with me and just the energy of the place, and you're hearing people's stories. And, you know, even when you're recovering in your room after just, you know, you're sitting there in current and you're feeling, you're being touched and you're feeling stitches being put into you. And, you know, I was on the plane on the way home and I had sutures being removed, right, at the time. And I swear, I just thought, oh, my God. I thought it was the guy sitting next to me. It was that obvious. I'm getting this pulling in my back. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, that's, like, really hurting. And you're not supposed to open your eyes, you know, for between 12 and 5. And I had to, because I thought, this, it's got to be him. It was so real. And I've had a look, and my little mate beside me was fast asleep, just nothing. But, you know, the feeling, the pulling of that thing, that was just like somebody was actually doing it. It was amazing. You're hearing footsteps around your room and the doors are opening and the spirit doctors are coming in. And, you know, I had my son that was quite sick while I was over there, and he was here. And so I sent him the doctors. I said to him, you know, Mummy's going to send you her doctors. And that night Craig had the video camera. He was filming one of the, you know, my mum's a ghost hunter. And he's hearing footsteps in the house, the bedroom door's opening, and he's hearing footsteps coming around the side of the bed where Diesel was sleeping, and he's hearing Diesel laugh because, you know, somebody's playing with his belly, and you know, all of this is happening. He's freaking out. And the next morning, Diesel was well. Like, go figure. I don't know. Is it coincidence? I don't know. But it's all down on film. It was amazing, just amazing. So, yeah, pretty exciting stuff.
No, well, look, we'll wrap it up there at the moment. I feel like we could do a few more in talks about this, because we're just sort of, I feel like we're just starting to not even touch the sides with you and with this, because I do cover a lot on this show, so it'd be awesome to get you back on, and Craig another time as well, because I just feel like we're just getting started here. But thank you for wanting to share this with people, because this is what it's about, just sharing the information. And thank you so much for just, you know, sharing personal information and some of your experiences.
Oh, no, seriously, Peter, it was my pleasure. I actually just thought of something about a site that you were asking about, you know, where it was a bit weird. We did Janolan Caves a few years ago, and we were getting in the caves down underground. We were getting music being played and voices and singing and children laughing and running around. And that was amazing, because, you know, you couldn't even, we're right underground in the bowels of the earth. Where are these things coming from? And it wasn't just once. We were able to repeat that a few times. So that was really, really, really cool.
Do you have any theories behind that, or anything psychically that comes into why that is? Like, why the music's down there,
there was talk about, they do it now, though, they hold concerts and stuff, but not particularly where we were. So whether back in the day when they were making the, you know, finding these places, whether they had their radiograms down there to, you know, keep them amused while they were working or whatever, but the children thing kind of stumped us. We had no idea why there was children sounds, particularly where we were. The music, we could kind of, you know, think, oh yeah, they brought a, you know, a radiogram down while they're working, and that could make sense. But the kids, we were never quite sure of why we heard them. But we'd love to go back there, actually, because our kids did an investigation and just nailed it. We didn't think anything was going to happen. Just let them in the front thing, and man, it was all going on for them. So they were really, they were wrapped with that, and we were a little bit unexpected, you know, to have all that sort of phenomena. But yeah, you know, it's another place we've got to go and do again. So yeah, cool.
Awesome. We'll keep in touch, and if Craig can hear me, cheers for popping on, mate.
Thanks, mate.
No worries. I'll let you go, but there'll be a link up in the description area of the video to you guys, and again, we'll keep connected. And again, thank you for sharing your experiences. And I'm sure people will be thinking about some of the stuff you guys have shared all around. So it's, you know, got me thinking too.
Oh, mate, there's plenty more we can chat about.
Yeah, no. We'll do that.
Scrape the surface, hey? So.
You'll be saying soon, Pete, piss off, mate.
Not at all.
No, thank you very much.
All good. We'll wrap up there. Love yous. And we'll talk soon, all right?
See you, buddy.
Bye.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.